This is episode 61 of the Forest Podcast for Thursday, January 20th, 2011. And welcome to the Forest Podcast. I am Mike Evans.
And I'm Kenneth Love.
And these are your daily tech design and development jelly bellies.
Jelly bellies.
Nom, 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 nom. What's your favorite jelly belly, Kenneth Love?
Either the toasted marshmallow or the buttered popcorn.
Oh, man. See, I like the ones that are...
Those two are delicious.
I like the berry flavors.
Berry flavors. The margarita one's not bad.
Never had the margarita one.
It doesn't really taste like a margarita, but...
I wonder if Jelly Belly will send you, like, a sampler packet that has, like, five of every single flavor.
I would love them forever if they did that and talk about them on the show daily.
I'm going to have to investigate that after the show. So, what's...
Because I love Jelly Belly.
Enough with candy talk today. What is our first story?
It's about candy. No, wait, it's
Damn
not.
It. The site looks like it could be about candy.
MikeDoesWeb.com.
MikeDoesWeb.
Not to be confused with Debbie Does Dallas.
No.
Mike Does
Kids,
Web.
Kids, remember, if you're under 18, go look that up immediately. Wait, that might be backwards.
Don't Google things you hear me mention. No, it's a man. It's a man named Mike's never-ending quest to stick his. Never mind. No, it's a 100% height div with two lines of code.
Damn right.
So, it's really annoying trying to get like a div that fills up the entire height of its container.
Right.
While still maintaining all of its content, because like if you set height to 100%, it fills up the 100% of the browser window. It doesn't take into account scroll, things like that. It's really annoying trying to do that. So his easy solution is two lines of JavaScript, four if you count the script tag. So basically he just gets the main container's offset height and sets the inner container, whatever one that you want to be 100% height, to have that same height. And that's
I'm all
it.
For it. I mean,
it works.
This is not new, but a lot of people, you know, say it must be done in CSS and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but this is two lines. If you do it in CSS, you have to have a specific layout to your wrappers.
Yeah, it's so much harder.
Right.
Or you have to fake it. You have to do these faux columns. Maybe you don't want the column look. You just want it to be clearing stuff and not to allow anything down. I mean, this is a simple, relatively elegant
and
solution.
And it's not even hacky. I mean, it's hacky that it's not CSS, but this is not confusing. This is not, you know, this is very...
Well, yeah, you're technically you're putting style into JavaScript, but so what? I mean, in your little semantic and standards-based world where everything has to be exactly separated according to what it does, yeah, this is
you
wrong.
You know why?
But that's not the real world.
You know why that is such a big deal to a lot of people and they, like, fight to the death? Even, okay, sure, I wouldn't have all of my JavaScript constantly writing new styles or whatever. That'd be bad. But there's people who would be against this. You know why? Because they don't want to fucking learn JavaScript. They want to say, I only do CSS and design, and I don't want to learn JavaScript, therefore... You know, this should not apply. This is bad, you know, styles. This is bad procedure.
So, I'm going to channel my inner doomsayer here. You know, the guys that, like, stand on the street corners and yell at you to repent because the end is coming. There will very soon be a day where if you don't... Okay, right now, if you don't know HTML and CSS, it's going to be damn hard to get a job as, like, a web designer. There will soon be a day where if you don't know JavaScript... Graphic design.
Oh, I guess.
You know, working in the print industry as it dies.
Unless you are Pasquale and you are the badass motherfucker illustrator.
Well, but he's an illustrator. Right. Illustration's different, though.
Right.
Because there are so many web designers and graphic designers out there that could never make it as an illustrator.
That's what I'm saying.
Illustration is a whole different ballgame. But if you're wanting to be a web designer and you don't know JavaScript, there's coming a day where you're not going to be a web designer. If you don't know JavaScript.
I think that day was 5 years
web designer,
ago.
No, not yet. There's still that whole front-end developer niche, however the hell you say that word. So, you know, there's still those guys. Those guys are eventually going to go away, and it's just going to be kind of combined. Front-end developers and web designers, bam, into one glorious little, like, Oreo pie kind of thing. And, yeah. So learn you some JavaScript for great good. I still haven't read that. Learn you some Haskell or learn
you
some.
Are those
the
only two they did? They should have done one for everything.
Well, they originally did those. They were halfway inspired by Learn Python the Hard Way and halfway inspired by Wise Poignant Guide to Ruby. So it's I guess only people that love Haskell and Erlang love their languages.
They need to do one that's learn PHP for Doom or something like that.
Well, there's already PHP.net, and W3 Schools covers PHP. And there's no better resource than W3 Schools.
Yes, as you learned in the last episode.
Right, like we talked about yesterday.
Let's talk about something we don't know anything about.
Talk about something we don't know enough about.
Enough. But that one. I've dabbled.
This is from Cloudant. Cloudant?
Yeah.
They're a Cloudant.
CouchDB hoster, I believe.
Are they? Okay.
Kind of like a Mongo HQ.
So they've got this article up here, and it's been viewed almost 90,000 times. It's a popular article. And it is learning MapReduce from the basics to the actually useful in under 30 minutes. Now, it'll probably take you more than 30 minutes to read this article.
Yes, because you went to Detroit
Public. So it's a bit of a lie. It'll take you more than a day to read this article. No, but it is like a really long, in-depth article.
Especially since it works for most things. Almost everything now has MapReduce, and almost everybody's MapReduce is based off of JavaScript.
Oh, look at that. It even uses Python.
You are such a
but no, titty. One of the major MapReduce things for a long time was Hadoop from the Apache
that
people.
That sounds like a Street Fighter move.
Hadoop.
Hadoop!
Well, maybe it is. I don't know. But yeah, now it's in Python, it's in Ruby, it's in JavaScript, it's in every damn thing under the sun. And I think Fortran got it while back.
It's
anyway,
about what database is supporting it and doing it too. So Mongo does a lot of MapReduce.
Mongo does it, CouchDB does it. I want to say like Cassandra and Bigtable do it. I don't believe Redis does, but I don't know that would really make sense for Redis.
And you take two actions. One is the map, one is a reduce. You don't always need the reduce. And map does exactly what it sounds like from any programming languages. It just goes through and it collects, you know, all the data that you want to work with, everything that you want to work on. And so, like, if you're doing a view, I mean, if you're doing couch, that would create a view, and you could then access all that data. And then if you want to reduce, a reduce is, from what I understand, basically like a filter that will come through and then say, give me the median of these numbers, give me these percentages of this. Like, that's when you actually go through a number crunch and whatever. And it works really well.
Right, and you end up turning your giant array into a very small array.
That is specialized and has done math to get you the numbers you want and everything. And it works really well going across different servers and gathering everything up and then crunching it down. One of the
things that I really like is that their example uses FAA flight FAA plane crash data.
Yeah, from data.gov, which is awesome.
That's such a cheery thing to be researching.
Well, it's a cheery thing to research if you notice a downward trend. Well, I don't know if you want. That's not the right word to use.
Maybe not a downward trend. I think that's the title of the episode. A downward trend.
that's what I understand about MapReduce. I tried to use it a few times with Mongo. I also think Vitamin Videos has something on doing MapReduce. You might want to check out. We are definitely not experts on it, but it's cool. Yeah.
So I'm typing something out here. Yes. No. It's definitely something to go find out about, especially if you are working with either very interesting statistics. Or a lot of statistics. It's definitely something that will save you a lot of hair pulling.
Word. So this next one, so I did all my research from my phone this morning, so I didn't actually go ahead and play the video.
This one, this is cool. We can't really say too much about it because it's a video, but it's from Sebastian Bapp, and it's on Vimeo. It's a video called "Make It Better." It kind of made the rounds a few days ago, so a lot of you may have seen it. It's been up for about a week now. But it's really, really well done. Some, like, kinetic typography stuff.
Okay.
So,
kinetic
typography. It's cool to see. Yeah, it's nice to get to see.
He should have used big text on it.
He should have used big text on it. But, you know, not everybody can be awesome, I guess.
I'm watching it now. It's kind of cool. All
right, so Vettermatic on Forest put up I guess this is a question.
No, it's
on
a rant in the form of a question.
And it's "Hey designers, contrast matters. Why do you hate my old eyes?" And he brings
That's
up a
why
really
I voted
good
for
point.
Obama. We're gonna send you to the to the old people death camps.
It wasn't a dev camp. It was
If you can't read this contract with America, then we know to get rid of you.
Which is set in light gray type on white paper. On bright white paper.
So what is he complaining about?
Well, so basically what he's saying is that a lot of the designers are putting up these really beautiful GUIs that they're mocking up in Photoshop or doing in CSS. And they're beautiful and they look really nice, but they tend to have very low contrast. So it's very hard to read it if you don't have good vision and great lighting.
I've noticed that. It seems to me like contrast is the enemy of the web these days.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of low contrast. And low contrast looks cool, but it's amazingly not useful.
Indeed.
Or usable, rather. So he links to dasplankton.de/contrast-a, which is a contrast and color blindness tester.
And yet they have dark background white text, which makes me want to punch him in the face.
And Autopoietic? Some other user in the comments links to a color contrast analyzer, which is cool. And it actually displays the actual contrast and whether or not it passes WCAG requirements. WCAG is like a set of laws.
Is that for British?
And requirements. It's for, I do believe, both the US and the UK. Okay. It may be only the UK, but I know there are laws about accessibility for the US.
I know that they're really,
you'll have heard of Section 5.8.
I know they're really big in the UK. Like, I've never heard anybody getting sued about it in the US. But in the UK, I remember BOAG talking about it all the time.
I don't know that there's been any suits in the US, but I do believe there have been a couple
Something for Target, I believe.
Like some threatening things, maybe. And one thing I like that Otto mentions is that adding a 2-pixel drop shadow or glow doesn't get you around it. You know, there's a whole lot of actual design in this to have something that still looks really good, but is also accessible. Being able to fill both of those needs shows that you're a really top-notch designer.
Word. You know?
So, yeah, I think it's kind of cool. And it's just remind people, not everybody is as young as you. We're not all 13-year-olds, Tap Touch.
Stop. You leave Tap Touch alone.
Hey, you know what? Paul Irish makes the same mistake.
Did you see that everybody who subscribes to the Forest Podcast Pro account is going to get a piece of Paul Irish?
I did. I saw that. Hey, I thought that was interesting. And they're apparently getting things from my closet.
Yes, unwashed t-shirts and an epileptic monkey.
Hmm. I'm going to have to start wearing
an
more
epileptic
t-shirts.
Epileptic pickpocketing monkey.
Yes, that'll be fun. So if you guys want to get in on the Forest Podcast Pro account, you should be sure to email us. Send your credit card details.
Just send us cash and envelope.
Take care of the rest of it. Cash in an unmarked envelope, that works too. So Roy, over on
another
Forest
Post. You'd another Forest Podcast.
I know. We gotta work on that. We gotta get more dribble content in here. he put up a freebie, a coded image slider. I haven't looked through the code, so I can't tell you if it's like really well done code or not, but, it's pretty cool. It's just a nice, clean little image slider with some rounded corners and round buttons and just looks nice. So if you want to download it.
If you like round things.
If you're like, dude, I like rounded rectangles.
If you listen to a lot of Sir Mix-a-Lot, then this is for you.
Sure. Let's go on to the next one
random.
Here. Draft board. You heard a draft board before? I thought it was some sort of.
I never trust
thing for
these
long
things. I've used so many of these.
Yeah. So draft board, it comes with a free plan, 1 gig of storage, one project, and then there are 4 other plans ranging from $12 a month up to $99 a month. And so basically, what it is, and I think it's kind of cool. It could be really handy. It's basically a way. You make your projects, and then you upload files, you upload drafts of designs, you upload inspiration, you upload all these things to share with your coworkers and with your clients. It's like Basecamp, but it's a little bit more directed at designers. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like Basecamp works, but it's maybe not the most intuitive or the nicest thing you've ever used, you might give this a try. I don't know. It looks cool. It looks handy. One thing I really like is that you can add, like, you upload an image, and then your client can go in and they can add annotations and notes and stuff onto that image to kind of let you know what they think, or you can put up an image, add notes to it, to explain things to a client, to be like, oh, you know, the reason we're doing this here is so that the logo, you know, looks better or whatever.
Man, I would have trusted this brand a lot more if the logo was just 20% bigger.
Yeah, the logo is a little bit bigger. Everybody's
gonna go for it. Yeah, those are true things that people say about your.
It is. Those are exact. I've heard that so many times. I've had all these people come up to me on the street and be like, dude, I love that thing you built, but I just can't pay for it because the logo is too small. Let's go on this next one.
This one.
Get Immersion.
I'm still gonna get my get
on. Yeah, so Git Immersion is a guided tour that walks you through the fundamentals of Git, inspired by the premise that to know a thing is to do it. So, I don't know, I like this. This was cool. I didn't go through all of it because I have a pretty decent idea of how Git works. But
right, it's just there's the monster that lives underneath your bed.
It's not for me.
And it delivers code to whoever you're working on.
Right, but this is pretty cool. There's a whole bunch of little steps, and it's by Edgecase, and it's just a really broken down guide to, like, you know, here's how to set up the name and email that your Git stuff gets pushed and pulled as. Here's how to set up your lined ending preferences. Just all this stuff. No. Right? As you go through it.
This is definitely cool for me. Like, I use Git, but I use it individually, and I've been trying to learn how to really use it in a team without fucking up a whole bunch of other people's stuff.
There are 53 pages of this.
And they go through, you know, amending commits and stuff like that. Things that you just don't normally get unless you're actively using it with other people.
Right.
So
yeah, no, I think if you're new to Git, this is definitely a good thing. This kind of reminds me of, we've covered it before on the show, but hginit, which was by
Master
somebody. P. I can't remember. Yeah, something like that. It's a similar kind of guided tour of a tool, which is kind of
be careful
kinda
with
handy.
This next name.
Kenneth Ballenegger. We're going to call him Cable.
All right, I like Cable.
So Cable here has a... Okay, so we'll go by his domain name, K-Swizz.
He's a cool fella, apparently.
Check out that shirt he's wearing in
hair.
That picture.
I think he's
hair.
Right
that
the
is
Jersey Shore.
Dude, he's going to break up the Jersey Shore.
But this looks handy for people who
are
doing...
He's
going to
fist pump like nobody
and
else.
Mac stuff.
I know we've got... Yeah, I know we've got a decent amount of people on... on Force that do Mac apps and iPhone
and
apps.
I think they're so much cooler than the rest of us. Just because they make money.
And now that they've read through the Git Immersion thing and they're like, I'm totally going to do it. I'm going to use a real version control system. Well, now here is the ultimate solution for Xcode auto-versioning with Git. Now, I obviously make no statements as to whether or not this is actually the ultimate solution to anything. but this is his ultimate solution. So it looks pretty simple. It's actually just setting a couple of little things, and you're done. Like it looks pretty cool. So yeah, check that out. Use this with your Git and your Xcode.
All right, I'll stop. I quit.
So you remember a while back we talked about how Node was kind of like taking over everything, and then we had what was it? The Node SQL.
Yeah.
The PostgreSQL or MySQL server, whatever it was.
Node is
Node.
Basically like our, you know, pretend kryptonite. We're going to use it. We're going to use it. Well, now maybe you actually will use it.
You remember that? You remember that really shitty Stephen King movie
All of
from
them?
Like the early 90s called The Langoliers? And
that sounds like a bunch of gay circus performers.
These people were on like a no, it's not Cirque du Soleil. These people were on an airplane flying, and then the airplane passes through some sort of like portal. And now they're in this world where there's nobody
else.
There's
a lamp monster.
And, no, it's not a lamp monster. It's like a giant Pac-Man that's going around like eating everything. Okay, and that was like a Langolier. That's what Node is. Node just kind of goes around eating everything. Because now we have Pi a la Node. Or watch where you stick that Python. This is basically Python running on Node.
It's like Ruby on Rails.
This really scares me.
How about PHP running inside of Rails?
You can run PHP inside of Python.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't like that. they both scare me. But if you're more brave than I am, and you're like, dude, I'm tired of setting up Green Unicorn. I gotta just use Node for all my Python shit. Then you can go check out neversaw.us and go read their Pi a la Node. This is actually from May of last year, so I'm way behind on this thing, but it still scares
what
the shit out of me.
What do you read that keeps giving you these old things?
It's fucking Pinboard and Hacker News, man. They come up with all sorts of old stuff. I don't know. Most of the time I'm good at avoiding the old stuff, but whatever. We're going to go on the next one. Favorite tools for late night startup hackers.
Oh, yeah, a list post.
So it is, but these are actually some like really good items. You don't have to be a startup hacker, and you don't have to work late at night for these things.
Well, they do only work some of these things only work at night. Propane will only work during the hours of 6 p.m. and 8 a.m.
So anyway, I'm a freelancer, as you know. I work at home. Most of my work is done with frequent guest host Chris Jones, and he lives in Vegas and I live in the Bay Area, so we don't live near each other, so we have to work remotely. So we end up being on Skype most of the time. I actually set up a VPN, so he just connects to my network, and we can do screen sharing and stuff like that. Before we had that, though, we used the first item on this list, which is Join Me. Join Me is awesome. Join Me is a free little screen sharing service that just runs inside your browser. So you don't have to sign up for anything. It's not like
I've used it before.
GoToMeeting or something like that
Zach
where you have
it's Vim.
Yeah, I showed you guys like Vim stuff with Join Me. It's an amazing, great way to do screen sharing to a lot of people. For something you don't want recorded or whatever, you just want to show somebody something. The other things they mentioned that are really handy, if they do, GitHub is handy. The propane one looks kind of handy if you use Campfire a lot. I don't use Campfire. I just use IRC, which is infinitely better.
What?
Because it's not inside
IRC
of a browser.
IRC
is ridiculous. That's why you're in, right?
And I have to be begged to go in there.
You have to be begged. Yeah. Who begged you today to go in there?
Your mom? I don't know. FaceTime!
We're going to move on. We're going to go to the next one here. Getting started with WebGL.
Oh, okay.
WebGL enables web content to use an API based on OpenGL.
Oh, let's see if I can try this out.
3D rendering in an HTML canvas in browsers that support
Mozilla.
It. So it's currently planned to arrive in Firefox 4. I want to say it works in Opera, but I could be wrong.
Is Firefox not already to 4?
Firefox is not already to 4. 4 is supposed to come out in, like, March.
Huh.
So it's not out yet.
This is just another old post.
No, this is not an old post. It
says January 2010 to me.
Well, you know what? Fuck you. Maybe it is an old post. No, page last modified, 15th January 2011. Ha-ha. Vindicated. It was just originally written a long time ago. but no, this is a guide from the MDC, from the Mozilla Developer Center, on how to get started with WebGL.
I wish I had a screenshot of something because I can't try it anywhere.
Yeah, I don't have anything that will do it either, so I wish there was a screenshot, but
if you
there's not.
3D stuff.
If you get it to work, send us a screenshot.
Recreate Doom in JavaScript in real 3D.
It'll be done before too
like
long.
It's been done
a
few times, but it's all like just really bad.
Yeah, there's not really anything you can do, and it's kind of there. All right, Smashing Magazine.
Oh, you know what? I saw some use in this, and then I thought, but everything that comes from being really handy by using Illustrator works better just doing HTML and CSS mockups. So, productive web design with Adobe Illustrator?
Vincent LeMoyne wrote this little article. And so basically it's how to utilize Illustrator to solve some regular design tasks. He thinks you can do it better in Illustrator than in other apps. And for a lot of the stuff, he's right.
Yeah, you can do it better than Photoshop. But like for a lot of the examples of why it's awesome, it's like, well, what if you have a bunch of buttons on the site and you want them all to be changed to this new layout? If you're an Illustrator, you can create, you know, what are they, parent objects or whatever. Or
right. Well, actually, a lot of that even works better in Fireworks than it does in Illustrator because you have
nothing beats
and stuff,
CSS
so.
And class names.
Nope. But if you're not one of those that can do this in CSS and HTML, then this is a way to do it in something that perhaps will work a little faster for you and a little better for you than Photoshop. So, I don't know. Give it a try. It's worth reading through, if nothing else.
Word. Right? What I want is something that is a quarter of the size of Illustrator or Photoshop or Photoshop. And we'll just put a box on my screen, allow me to put like gradients and try out that. And then once you draw a gradient or once you do a stroke or something like that, we'll just give you the CSS to add in for that one specific thing you just did. Because it's annoying trying to draw like gradients and stuff with doing the colors, the numbers and stuff. Like, it seems stupid to open up an entire Photoshop instance. Somebody should make that put on the App Store.
Yes, I agree. They should. That would be cool. I mean, I guess you get kind of similar things with CSS edit. You can almost get. I mean, you're not drawing it out, but you can see it like real time your CSS and stuff. So it's kind of handy in that same way. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know.
You know, it needs to be a dashboard app.
Dashboard. Yeah. You just hit F12 and then it pops up. And I think it should just be done on Adobe Air. That way, it runs everywhere, right? Okay, this next one from Ankane or Ankane or something like that on GitHub. The project is called Katana, and it is for managing multiple environments on Heroku. Is this something that would be useful to you?
There's already one that was doing this, but this looks great. Like, far too many times I ignore doing like a staging or development server and stuff like that simply because I don't want to have to set it up and do it with Heroku. But this looks like you'll be able to just say, give me a development one, give me a staging one, give me a production one, and get her done. So
yeah, it looks very simple to use. So, and it's under active development. I mean, the last updates were 5 days ago, so it's you know, being actively worked on. I don't know, it's worth looking into. Do it, man. Let us know how it works. So one of the most annoying things that
happens
to do
awesome
in data management is parsing of names.
I hate you.
It sounds so easy. You're like, oh, you just cut the names apart. No. It's amazingly hard. And as you can tell from Mike's little comment there, this isn't in Ruby. This is in Python. And it is something that's definitely needed. So splitting apart people's names, like I said, is amazingly hard. Not all cultures have the same first name, last name setup that we do. They don't always express them in the same order. I do believe it's what Japanese or Chinese puts like the family name first and then the individual's name, things like that. Some languages have like, or some cultures have like five middle names or five words in the last name or whatever.
And some people just
put
in the doctor and you're like, well, what the hell does that mean?
Right. So it's very hard to split these apart. So what this is a nice little Python module called Python Name Parser. And it does its best to split apart anybody's name that you pass in. There's over 100 unit tests with example names, so it should be covering perhaps not every possible combination, but a whole lot of them. Yeah, but a whole lot of them. And it also handles capitalization support, which is really cool. You can do name.capitalize once you have the name split apart, and it will capitalize the appropriate parts of the name. Yeah, it looks really nice. So yeah, check this out if you need to
get
do a lot of name
done
stuff in Python. Okay. What's
Hello,
this next one here? This is
Hacker
News. Oh yeah, this is, I thought this was kind of neat. This is PageForest.
I didn't know what the hell
this is. PageForest is an in-browser, well, it's a web app, but it's like in-browser. It uses like local storage, I do believe, to give you like a wiki that's running. So it's really cool. It has Markdown for converting, you know, text to HTML. Uses Auto Resize for controlling the text area size. PageForest, which is this guy's own project, which is a cloud-based storage and user authentication. So you can write complete web apps without writing any server-side code.
What's
and jQuery. So basically, this guy's showing you how to integrate his PageForest wiki kind of thing into your own sites. It's an 80-line web app, which is pretty cool. It's amazingly small. So, yeah.
How did I not
check
see
that
this
out
last post?
I just added it in a couple hours ago. Maybe you didn't refresh. So the WOTWG, this is the working group that originally gave us HTML5. The W3C then.
These are the guys who were all like, so, we don't like the way things are doing. There's too much bureaucracy. We're going to start our own.
And we thank them for it every single day. No, so Ian Hickson was one of the guys that originally founded it, and he announced yesterday, January 19th. So yesterday we had the HTML5 logo, right? All the hype from the W3C. Well, yesterday we also had an important announcement from the WOTWG, which is probably a more important announcement and had much less hype into it. I like this a lot. Basically, what it boils down to is that there is no longer any such thing as HTML 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever. HTML is HTML is HTML, and it is a living specification, which means it will not have set milestones of this is going to be HTML5, this is going to be HTML4, so on and so forth. It is going to continually evolve and be just what is most commonly used in HTML, which is good. It means there's less friction amongst groups.
Whatever.
There's less fractioning. This is good.
It's still there's no snazzy need logo to have some for sort of it. Version number, so why not?
Why does it have to have a version number?
Because, I mean, if you're going to be looking at what's supported in this one, I mean...
Why does it have to have a version number? What works in current HTML? That's it. Is this current valid HTML? Yes. Or no. Does this browser support current HTML? Yes.
Right.
Or no.
Well, what does it support?
You don't need a version. Who cares? If it doesn't support the existing spec for HTML, who cares? It's not a valid
It's not a valid web browser.
It was valid
when it came out 2 weeks ago, but it's not valid now? That's ridiculous.
It's not going to change that fast. It's not going to change that fast, dude. Come on. It's taken them 4 years to get HTML5 to the point where it is now, and it's still not even a suggested version, according to the W3C. It's going to be years between them changing what is current valid HTML and what is not. But the thing is that they're not going to do the long, drawn-out approval process that they used to do. Things are going to move faster, but it's still not going to be, like, a week. It's going to be, like, a year.
Whatever.
It's good. It's a good thing. You can sit there and conspiracy theory all you want, but it's a good thing.
Conspiracy theory, I mean, you know...
Yeah, whatever, you know, unhosted.
I mean, especially if it's moving faster, then it needs a number even more. If it was moving at 2 years at a time, then a number really wasn't important. But if it's...
Well, I'm sure it will end up having some sort of, like, revision
so
number, right?
To,
like, this is HTML revision 32.
Going to have a number.
But it's not... Well, what the point is that they're not going to be cutting them into these arbitrary buckets of HTML4 versus HTML5 versus HTML6. It's going to be, this is the state of HTML as of revision 32, and when we get to revision 33, it's going to be slightly different. That's the whole point. There's no longer this stupid giant bureaucracy of, oh, well, I don't support HTML5 because it's not in enough browsers.
I'm still using my logo.
You get that? Okay, you can use the logo. I don't think anyone's going to care. You know, nobody's going to be
the
like,
logo's
dude.
It's going to be HTML5 with a silhouette of a dude shrugging his shoulders. HTML5.
He's like, nah. Okay. Whatever. But I mean, really, who cares about HTML5? HTML5 is so old. It's all about, you know, PHP 6.
So I think that's it.
That's
where we slowed down.
That's where the real money is. We did.
We
didn't have as much stuff today.
Trajectory. A downward trend.
All right. You can visit our lovely website at forestpodcast.com. It's supposed to have an update, but, you know,
well,
Mike.
Huh?
You can read about us, facto.me/forestpodcast. You can talk to us on Twitter, Forest Podcast. And you can email us, podcast@forest.com.
That's right. So, bye, everyone, and hope you have a good weekend. We'll see you on Monday. We are over and out.